As a kid, I was never all that impressed with magicians. See, from a very young age, I was always able to figure out most of their tricks. I guess it was really hard to misdirect me. I just always knew that there was some way the magician was doing it. Even if I didn't know how, I knew that there was a bunny hidden inside that hat somewhere. That was until I experienced real magic. The thing is, with real magic, you can tell the difference. I believe some traditional magicians possess this ability, but very, very few of them. And there's one warning I need to bestow upon you if you do encounter it. There is always a cost, and it's usually very high. The only time I ever witnessed real magic was during a road trip to New Orleans with my girlfriend Sandra last year. We are sort of thrill seekers and often take little trips to all these outlandish places. I guess you could say it was our thing. It was fun, but sometimes we would go too far. We would amp each other up and end up doing something that was a little more than either of us could handle. As an example, we were once signed up to do the extreme haunt McCamey Manor before we were talked out of it by her brother. When we first arrived in New Orleans, we did all the normal tourist trap type stuff, Bourbon Street, graveyard tours, you know, the works. I thought it was all a blast, but nothing seemed to completely satisfy Sandra. She wanted to experience something a bit more unique, more authentic. We tried to satiate that impulse by visiting various voodoo shops and asking around about different objects and legends that maybe tourists would not normally come to see. But those sorts of places are just so used to annoying college kids interested in drunken palm readings that they didn't take us seriously. They just said they didn't have anything like that and that we should look around the gift shop to see if we wanted to buy something. That was until we arrived at a place called Bone Daddy's Palace. When we walked in, we were immediately bombarded with the intense aroma of musk. You could tell this was definitely one of the lesser visited shops in the French Quarter, just by how old and unkempt everything was. The entrance had a lot of things that looked similar to what most of the other places had. At the back, though, there was this doorway with a sign that said, "No photos allowed." Intrigued, we headed in that direction. There was a man back there on the phone. We overheard him saying some things to the person on the other end that were pretty disturbing. He was saying things like, "Calm down. What exactly have you been experiencing? When did it begin?" As if there was a terrified person on the line who had bought something cursed from him. Sandra knew this was the guy we needed to talk to. So after he got off the phone, she immediately went to chat with him. He seemed more desperate for business than I had even initially thought. He looked a bit like Tim Curry with a tux and well-groomed goatee. And when Sandra brought up that we wanted to find something authentic in New Orleans, his eyes lit up. He apparently had just the thing. But of course, it was expensive. There was a private ferry that he could charter for us, which belonged to a friend of his. I was a little freaked out by that. It sounded maybe a little bit too real. But I was still on board as long as Sandra was. He also mentioned that there would be another family joining us, which I guess calmed me down a little bit. So later that night at around 9, we showed up at these docks off of the Mississippi River. There was a family of three waiting there, a father, mother, and 10-year-old boy. Which we were both a little weirded out by the fact that there was a kid, but the family did appear to be adventurous. So again, we kind of looked past it. The river that night was dark and obscured by a heavy mist. A guy in his early 20s hurriedly pulled his bicycle up to the dock. We were thinking he was just another person for the tour, but then he pulled boat keys out of his pocket. "Howdy folks, I'm Kyle. I'll be taking you up river today," he said as he strolled toward one of the pontoon boats called Swamp Thing. As the boat gently glided out into the night, we tried to ask the driver about the tour. He avoided the question by saying it would be more fun if we didn't know. So we accepted that and relaxed a little bit. I mean, he wasn't really threatening. And we had told people about the Tim Curry guy at the shop before we left. So if they were trying to pull something on us, it wasn't very intelligent. He eventually drove us from the wide part of the river into a smaller little canal. After winding through these dark woods, it came up to a small wooden dock, which sat in front of a quaint two-story house nestled in the forest. "I'll be out here waiting for y'all when the show's over," Kyle said casually. I was growing a little annoyed and decided to finally get some answers from him. "Hey, man, what show? What is this place?" I asked a bit aggressively. "It's just a classic New Orleans magic show, okay?" he replied. "A magic show, really?" I looked at Sandra, and she seemed as annoyed as me. "Yep, and he's just gonna do one trick. But I'll tell you what, no one has ever asked for their money back." The little kid in the group ran past me, as excited as could be, his parents chasing behind. Kyle then turned away, shrugged his shoulders, and pulled out a cigarette. He then turned up some weird AM talk show station and tuned out. Pretty disappointed, but without any other options, Sandra and I began to hike up the path towards the house. As we approached the front door, we saw a man standing there, not saying a word. He was wearing a top hat and a suit, and had his face painted white and like a skull. The front door was wide open and led to a stage that was set up in the living room. We walked in and sat down next to that family. The man slowly walked back inside, then surprisingly jumped up on stage and pounded his feet down. "I am Edward the Enchanter, and this is magic." Sandra rolled her eyes so hard I didn't think they would come back out. The man then approached the group and asked for a volunteer. The kid raised his hand, of course. He was brought up on stage and sat down in a little wooden chair. The magician took out a blindfold and wrapped it around the kid's eyes. Then he began to wave his wand in the air. Things immediately began to get spooky after that. I started hearing this low echoing from outside and whistling through the trees. It looked like the enchanter's eyes lit up, almost like there was some sort of force behind them. Then these little streams of cloudy smoke bellowed out from the end of his wand. He stared at the ground for a few minutes. We all sat uncomfortably in the bizarre silence as nothing really happened. Then he started to shake and scream in pain. His skin began to peel off, and from the inside of his body, a ghastly form began to emerge. It was like a shapeshifter, switching forms constantly. One second it looked like a giant lizard, then like some kind of demented human-sized rat. But finally it stopped, taking on the form of this giant, disturbing bunny rabbit with these long white teeth. Even Disney World couldn't make costumes that believable. I wanted to run, but was too terrified to move. Then the magician took off his hat and held it next to the kid. These sharp-toothed demons began to swirl out from it, snapping and biting at the air. Then the child screamed and was sucked back into the hat. Then we looked to our side and the parents faded away as well. Looking back on it now, something tells me that the family was never actually there to begin with, and that they were just some sort of ploy to make us feel comfortable. The rabbit gazed at us with these vacant black eyes and a grin that will haunt my nightmares forever. I can't remember if it was me or Sandra who tried to run first, but before I knew it, we were trying to open the front door. It would not budge, though, and it wasn't locked. We turned back to the magician, knowing that if we were going to leave, he would have to allow us. Then the hideous, man-sized rabbit began to slowly step towards us, the wood creaking with every step. He then lifted up his hand and raised one finger. I knew what this meant. He only wanted one of us. But before I even had the chance to react, Sandra looked at me and mouthed the words, "I'm sorry." Then she stepped forward, offering herself. I screamed and lunged forward, trying to stop her, but then realized I couldn't even move a muscle. The rabbit then stepped towards her and put his hat on her head. I began to cry as he disturbingly stretched the hat over her, trapping her inside. A few moments later, the hat shrunk back down to size and the magician put it back on his head. He then casually walked toward the front door, lifted his hand, and opened it, without even touching the handle. After he was out of sight, I once again was able to move. I ran outside and looked everywhere for him, but he was nowhere to be found, and the boat was gone as well. I quickly contacted the police, and they searched the house, the woods, everywhere around the property. They just kept telling me, though, that it hadn't been lived in for years. But I knew that wasn't true. The investigation continued for months. As for Bone Daddy's palace, well, the guy we met never worked there. I met the owner and he was an old man who looked nothing like him and claimed to have not hired any employees in years. The same went for the college boat driver named Kyle. No record of him either. Were they actually real? Was it some kind of crazy illusion? I don't know. All I do know is that the police have pretty much given up looking for Sandra. So till this day, I'm having to keep up the investigation. Yet I don't follow up with the normal leads. I've been taking a more supernatural angle, and I know that eventually I'll find real magic again. That's the only way. The only way that I will ever see Sandra again.